So this morning's Dharma talk is on finding refuge in the unknown, the title of our retreat this weekend. And I just want to remind everybody that during a Dharma talk, it's helpful to have an open mind and an open heart. Maintain your awareness in present moment awareness. You might have part of your attention on the talk and part of your attention on your breath, anchoring into the present moment. So if you find yourself drifting off, just return to the breath. Also, a reminder that this practice and this talk, sharing the Dharma, it's not based on the expert model. So there's nothing that you need to remember. There will be no tests or quizzes on any of this. It's really about taking what you need and seeing what sticks and what doesn't, letting go. Some of this may resonate with you, and some of what I say may not, and just finding what is helpful to you. So, just beginning by noticing our tendency to attempt to control life's circumstances. Just tapping in and thinking about your tendencies or habits, maybe to plan. If you're like me, there's all sorts of lists going on in my head that I end up having to get out on paper or my phone just so that I can get them down. There's lots of planning the mind wants to do. Or you may often be thinking about the future and trying to predict what will happen or prevent what will happen. This attempt to micromanage, or for many of us, we may obsess over details. Just noticing different ways that you may attempt to control life circumstances. And when my children were babies, my husband and I used to try to plan out most things because we found that the chaos was averted if we had things a little bit more planned out. So one of the things my husband would do is he'd even plan out exactly when he would do the dishes, and he would scrub them furiously in order to get them done before the baby woke up. And he just had it all contained in that way. And then he just noticed years after the kids were no longer babies anymore, that he was still doing that. He was still rushing through the dishes, because he had that pattern to control the circumstances. And he realized, oh, he didn't need to do that anymore. He could actually enjoy washing the dishes, which he enjoys. He likes washing dishes mindfully. So we hold onto these patterns even when they're no longer needed and they no longer serve us. We grasp onto these patterns. They temporarily feel, it feels like we can control some little dimension of life. But in the bigger picture, this control, this grasping is directly related to our suffering. So, meditation teacher Jack Kornfield said, grasping and clinging and holding on to the things that are changing doesn't work very well. You get rope burn, basically. Suffering is caused by resisting the way things are. Freedom comes from dancing with the changes of life. I'm always struck by that idea of dancing with change. And even just the the term dancing with the changes of life really shifts my relationship with the things that I want to control. Just be like, oh, I could dance with this. There could be flow here. And just noticing the tendency to want to know things, and maybe like create formulas and recipes so that we know how to handle life. And we know how to handle life circumstances, and we know how to live, and we'll know how to die. And using our spiritual practice often as sort of like, oh, if I just do this, it's all going to be okay. Or this is a good, I have to remember to do this because this is a good recipe. So for many years, I was always seeking like wisdom in the unknown, you know, recipes for life, finding all those great spiritual books that would just like, I mean, they inspired me, right? Many of you may be inspired by spiritual books. They're great momentarily. And I really enjoy sinking myself into a really good spiritual book that helps bring me into that, you know, sense of the infinite, you know, something beyond my little space. But there's a that I often found that there's like this grasping, like, oh yeah, that's how to do it. That's how to become enlightened. We only did this. But what we really need is to let go of the known. And Jack Kornfield calls it this, the wisdom of uncertainty, or the title of Indian sage Krishnamurti's book, Freedom from the Known, where he said, truth is a pathless land. So just letting that sink in. There's such a tendency to want to seek truth in the known. But what if truth is pathless? It's a pathless land that we come upon moment by moment. I used to want to know the truth of the whole universe. So when I was really young, I used, at night, and some of you may have done this or may still do this. I sometimes do this now, is just try to imagine what's beyond space and time. Try to wrap my mind around this eternity or the infinite. What is beyond the infinite? Or I used to, what is beyond the Big Bang? How did we get here? And think that my mind could figure it out. Then everything would fall into place. So the Indian mystic Osho has said, one thing, you will not find a ready-made path. It is not so cheap to reach the ultimate realization of truth. You have to create the path by walking yourself. The path is not ready made, lying there and waiting for you. It is just like the sky. The birds fly, but they don't leave any footprints. You cannot follow them. There are no footprints left behind. So the path is not pre-made. You're creating as you go. And consider the difference between planting certain seeds for beneficial conditions versus trying to control our outer circumstances. So Thich Nhat Hanh often talks about planting these seeds and you know, if we plant the seeds of love and kindness and compassion, then we see one result. When we plant the seeds of resentment, judgment, and those kind of more negative seeds, then we have different result. So just realizing planting seeds can be beneficial. How do we plant the seeds, but not try to control everything that goes on around us, right? It's sort of like creating conditions for beneficial circumstances without a chokehold and trying to like make things happen a certain way. So I recently took my oldest daughter to the ocean to celebrate her graduation from college. And there was a tendency within me to like plan it all out. I noticed it. I'm grateful for the practice for noticing, oh yeah, I'd like to like plan out these days so that we have a great time, like thinking that if I plan it, I'm gonna be able to create this great time for my daughter and I. But instead, I sort of planted some seeds. I had some ideas of things we could do, but I didn't plan any of it out. I just sort of had some seeds that I could toss out there and see if they germinated. And it was wonderful. It created this like wonderful flow where we didn't know what we were doing day to day, but everything just sort of like flowed and it was lovely. And we had a really beautiful time together. But I've heard of people doing the opposite. I've never really been one to hyper plan my vacations, but I have heard of people, and you may have this experience, where you really plan out every little piece of a vacation. And even just reading examples of this raises my anxiety levels. So I'm going to read a little piece from Elle magazine on their dream vacation description. And you can see how it makes you feel. Do yoga while overlooking rice paddies. Visit an 8th century monastery clinging to a 9,678-foot cliff. Shop in rambling ancient markets. Hike past yak herders and Buddhist monks through dramatic mountain passes and lush valleys. Ride elephants. Go to scuba diving among the giant manta rays. Kayak past icebergs. Explore the sweeping, ruddy rockscape of Wadi Rum via camel. Take seaside cooking classes, hike Boulder and Absal across tabletop mountains. So you get the idea. There's a difference, right, between planting seeds that help create beneficial circumstances and planning to control our circumstances, to try to create just the right situation. And we know from maybe personal experience or stories from others that when we have too much of a plan in mind, typically we can get disappointed. It never goes the way we plan it out, right? It just doesn't seem to work that way. And often the planning is around controlling or the hyper planning. It's not to say that no plans, you know, just throw away all plans, because I've been in experiences where no planning also can create negative experiences where you just aren't able to manifest certain experiences that you'd like to have. If you don't have at least sort of like an idea or heading toward the North Pole, the North Star, a vision of where you might want to go without too much attachment. It's a balance. At the root of our tendency to attempt to control life circumstances, even our relaxation, can't say that word, relaxation time can create sort of a sense of fear a sense of vulnerability and powerlessness in the face of uncertainty. There's this belief that if we control our circumstances, then we can be at peace. I think we might not like say that to ourselves in so many words, but I think that deep under, for many of us, it is this idea, if I do control my circumstances, then I will be at peace. So Dr. Amy Johnson focuses on helping people change these types of habits. She says, I suspect it's slightly different for everyone, but here's what control mode looks and feels like for me. My vision gets very narrow and focused. My breath is shallow. Adrenaline is pumping and my heart rate increases. My mind shifts from topic to topic and from past to future very quickly. And I have little concentration, poor memory, and almost no present moment awareness. In surrender mode, I'm calm and peaceful, breathing deeply, present in the moment. I see clearly and my vision extends out around me, allowing me to literally see the bigger picture. So the great irony is that attempting to control things actually feels less in control. When I'm micromanaging and obsessing over details, I know I'm in my own way. So meditation helps us become intimate with whatever is happening in the present moment. If we experience fear or anxiety, the practice invites us to be with that experience. We get curious about the experience. Where in the body do you feel the fear? Is it solid, or is there some type of movement there? How is the feeling of anxiety different from the feeling of excitement? So I had this experience a number of years ago where I was invited to give a keynote speech to a group of urban planners. And I found this very intimidating. I do not have a planning background, but I wrote a book about suburban sprawl in the Phoenix metropolitan area. And so I had these invitations, and I felt really, really nervous driving down to this one particular event. And I'm really grateful again for the practice, because I just tuned in to the anxiety. I realized like my mind was just all over the place. I was really, really undermining my own confidence and wondering like, how am I going to pull this off? All kinds of things. And when I tuned into the direct experience of the anxiety, I realized that it was really just an incredible movement in my body. It was very alive. The sensation of it was actually very thrilling. And I started to wonder, like, is this anxiety or is this excitement? And I really couldn't distinguish too much the difference. So I decided I would just stay with the excitement feeling. And so I stayed with the feeling of the adrenaline and all of the shakiness that I was experiencing in my body, and the way in which I framed the experience really shifted from one of real foreboding to one of excitement. And by the time I was down there, I was super excited to meet the people and offer them this presentation. So it's just getting real intimate with the direct experience, because we create, as you know, so many stories around our experiences. And when we just tune in to the breath and the feeling in our body, we can let go of these stories and sometimes reframe or just be with the experience as it is, and moving away from the stories that we're creating around the experience. So rather than avoiding the unknown, which is our tendency, for the most part, many of us, we can take refuge in the unknown, the topic of this weekend retreat. So when we think about taking refuge, this is about seeking shelter from danger, right? We perceive the unknown as dangerous. But what if the unknown is life itself? With meditation, we practice beginner's mind. And this is about being present with the mysteries of life. As we're present with the unknown, uncertainties and mysteries, we become familiar with them, like how they feel, what they're like. So what happens when we become familiar with and get comfortable with the discomfort of uncertainty? Like, could you imagine the possibilities of befriending the unknown and even finding comfort and care in the unknown? After all, the unknown accompanies us everywhere we go. We don't know what the next moment will bring. And this moment itself is a great mystery. I think as practitioners, sometimes we even take for granted this present moment, thinking we know what the present moment is. But when we really tune in, the present moment is gone as soon as you become aware of it. And yet, it's always here. So in your practice, when you're tuning in to that present moment, noticing just how slippery that it isn't a moment. Is there any time in that moment? If you try to cut it down to a second, is that the present moment? Try to grasp the second moment, the moment in a millionth of a second. Is that the present moment? Right? It doesn't live in time. And of course, the mind can't really understand this, so don't try too hard. Get a headache. But just being with that mystery. You know, Ajahn Shanti has said, "You are an incredible mystery that you will never figure out. To be this mystery consciously is the greatest joy." So, I'd like to lead us in a little bit of a guided meditation into the unknown. Taking refuge in the unknown. And so I invite you to get comfortable. Bringing your attention to your breath, closing or averting your eyes. And there's lots of ways, there's lots of portals into the unknown. We'll begin with the breath. Just noticing. Noticing your breathing. Noticing the air as it moves through your nose, through your chest. Deep into your body. Watching your stomach rise as you breathe in. Fall as you breathe out. The air as it moves up through your body and out your nose. Notice the space between the in-breath and the out-breath, that there is this moment between the breath. See if you can feel into the spaces between your in-breath and your out-breath, your out-breath and the next in-breath. Not trying to mentally understand them, but more like just feeling into them, noticing the space within the breathing. You can drop into conscious awareness this little question: what's here? What's here in this space? Don't try to answer that question with the mind. Just see what bubbles up when you ask, what is here? See if you can notice the quality, the characteristics of what's present between breaths. Notice any tendency to want to name the experience. See if you can be with the experience of the space between breaths without labeling. If you find your mind grasping on or drifting away from the breath, see if you can return to this space. If you find yourself confused or frustrated, you might also just return to a regular breathing practice. Noticing spaces can act as portals into the unknown. A place that's rich with life and mystery. So there are other spaces that you can notice during meditation as doorways into the unknown. So another one is the space between thoughts. So I invite you now to notice your thoughts. See if you can notice the moment between when one thought ends and another thought begins. And again, just as with we did with the breath, see if you can just feel into that space. These are places that are with us all the time, but we're typically not pointed toward. Places for exploration, just to experience. If your mind drifts off, see if you can just gently return back, noticing your thoughts, noticing the space between thoughts, or even just putting a little attention to this question, where did this thought come from? Where is it arising from? Not trying to wrap your mind around the question, not even trying to answer the question. Just bringing attention to this mystery as the thought arises. You may notice a deep silence, deep stillness in these places. Recognizing that these silent, mysterious, unknown places have qualities, and that they are always with us. This deep inner stillness, inner silence, can be a place of refuge. Ma Deva Padma has said, rest inside and plumb the depths of your own inner silence to the point where it meets the silence of the universe.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.